Good morning. It's another Friday, and another Friday means another podcast, the Zogby Report, real and unscripted. With me, I'm John Zogby, and my son and partner, Jeremy Zogby. How are you doing today, Jer?
Good morning. Happy New Year.
And the same to you, and the same to everybody out there. All right, the huge week. You know, when so many things going on at the same time, hey, not the least of which is a very important country in the midst of some turmoil, Kazakhstan. Look at Kazakhstan on the map and look at how huge it is. It is oil rich, and at the same time, it is a focus of attention, heavy investments by China and Russia and United States oil companies. And it's in the middle of what could be a very violent revolution and Russian intervention. So we're watching Kazakhstan all the way over in Central Asia, but we're watching here as well. And January 6th, that would be yesterday for us as we're recording, this was the anniversary of the Capitol Hill insurrection. And it was marked by a speech by President Biden. I watched the speech, and then I listened to it again. And so I want to talk about it. I thought it was good. And I thought it was good for this reason. Somebody has to try to regain control of this national community. Somebody has to try to regain control of the Constitution. And the fact that if we are going to be bound together as a national community and as a nation, and that a president is in charge, then the president has to be in charge. And I liken the speech that Biden gave historically to 1995. Many of you will remember, some of you may have read, that in 1994 was a so-called Republican Revolution. And the Republicans won 62 seats, and for the first time in decades, won control, both the House and the United States Senate, at which time then the Speaker of the House, the leader of the Republicans in Congress, Newt Gingrich, came up with an agenda, an agenda that he would drive, take the lead for, and many were calling him the Prime Minister of the United States, as the president was pushed, Bill Clinton, into the background. And in the final analysis, what happened was that at one point in the February, March or so of 1995, Britt Hume, lately of Fox News, but then White House correspondent for ABC News, stood up at a press conference and said, "Mr. President, is the presidency still relevant?" At which time Clinton gave an answer, but kind of a bumbling answer. It had looked like he was ceding authority over to the prime minister. And then what happened was the Oklahoma City bombing. Clinton went out there, spoke for the nation, delivered really, and this was an eloquent president, regardless of what anybody thinks of him, an eloquent president who really captured the sentiment and the hurt of the people in Oklahoma City and in the nation, and restored his potency to the presidency itself. And then from then went on to win a commanding victory in 1996. I couldn't help but think that this was Biden's attempt, number one, to stop being purely reactive and to be proactive. To say that the United States is on the verge or of an abyss, just as Barack Obama, Jimmy Carter, and even some prominent Republicans have said, and to regain control, not only the nation, perhaps more importantly for him, regain control of his presidency. Early, incomplete piece of evidence was the only poll taken that was partially after his speech. So it was taken January 5th and January 6th through the evening by Reuters, shows an average approval rating over the two nights of 45%, suggesting to me that maybe his polling last evening after the speech was a bit higher and just averaged down to 45 because of the earlier numbers. In any event, I thought it was a good speech and a good effort on his part. As always, what do you think?
Well, I have some immediate questions. And I have to admit that I didn't get a chance to watch the speech yet. So I have to ask you. Let's take Biden, his inaugural address, right? Because that happened after January 6th, and some speeches after that where he addressed the nation and referenced January 6th. And let's put those, you know, for 2021. And then here we have the first major speech of 2022. What was said that was I don't want to say revolutionary, but what was very different? What was very different? And what signals that there's going to be a new way forward? Anything different than what Biden and his presidency did in 2021?
All right, that's a very good question. Number one was clearly the tone of the speech, in which he laid blame right at the doorstep of the former president. Never mentioned Donald Trump by name, but he said the former president, or at the time the president of the United States, urged, egged on, helped organize. He got much more specific, not only than he's ever been before regarding Donald Trump's role, but more specific than one would ever expect a sitting president to do to a former president. We have to put this in context. The Trump behavior and the response to Trump is really a whole lot different than we've ever experienced in the Oval Office before or in presidential addresses. So that was first and foremost. Secondly, that he backed the aggressive investigation, the root causes of the January 6th insurrection, and in effect, I believe for the first time, talked about the clear, he didn't use these words, but in essence, the clear and present danger that could be the residual impact of this insurrection, that in fact, not only may it not be over, but we, as with a number of instances like COVID, for example, we can expect that this will continue, into the at least the near future, and that all Americans need to be vigilant and be prepared, and that government alone can't root this out. Our hearts and souls have to. So he carried this a lot further, and then his tone was a tone of not calm, a calming, but one of rage, I would say, borderline rage.
Okay. Because to me, it doesn't seem...
This was a clarion call.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't seem any different. And to me, it sounds like we're still... It sounds like the president and his cabinet are still stuck on, January 6, 2021. And I can't say that they don't have any reason not to be. From their vantage point, they felt under attack, and they felt that their presidency is still viewed as illegitimate. So, of course, you can expect some defensiveness. But nonetheless, a year later, and clearly what happened throughout the first year of his presidency has not been favorable. I mean, we have a lot of independents who are clear now and at this moment that they are not with Joe Biden. If the election were held today, hypothetically, there's a good chance that Donald Trump could win. So I guess my question is, why couldn't the president find a different speech? Why couldn't he move forward with healing and unity? from what you're describing, I don't hear healing and unity. I hear an amping up of the attack against the right and the conservatives and those who don't see him as legitimate.
Okay, so make no mistake about it. And this is purely interpretation. We are in a hyperpartisan moment. President's numbers are upside down, although I caution people that while they're upside down, they're not George W. Bush numbers or Jimmy Carter numbers, you know, that were in the 20s and low 30s. You know, Biden's averaging, you know, in the low 40s and possibly moving up. But I think essentially what we saw in the speech was a clarion call, number one, to get back his base. Remember, in our polling, we're showing him polling in the high 70s, low 80s support among Democrats. Obviously has to do better than that. And then secondly, in that speech, also talking to independents. Now, a lot of independents, at one point we measured that almost half of independents are actually conservative on some issues anyway, on the spectrum. But there is the other half of independents that, you know, could be, well, not only possibly liberal or moderate, but remember Biden won independents by 20 points. Now he's upside down among independents, 2-1. I think it was about, he was down about 18 or 20 points in our poll, 45-26 or something like that. So his he knows he's not getting support among Republicans. And so what he needs to do is at least build back better among Democrats and independents. There's also another element of the speech yesterday, and one of the reasons why maybe, you know, you're right, there was a bit partisan, and that is he wants to rally support for the Voting Rights Act. That what, in his view, for two reasons. One, in the interest of fairness, we have to, number one, believe that everybody's vote will count, that everybody has the same chance to vote, and that to overturn some of the efforts in states to limit the opportunities for voting, mainly directed at non-whites. And the, you know, the second piece of that is the full knowledge that, and the Republicans understand this very well, that if you pass the Voting Rights Act, you're enabling Black voters to turn out to vote, poorer voters, younger people, giving them more conveniences and opportunities to vote, and that more than likely that's going to tip the scales in elections to Democrats. So yeah, no question at all that it was a partisan speech. But I think that's what he needed to do. He's not going to get the other half.
Well, no, he's not going to get the other half, but as you alluded to, he's losing with independents, and right now we have reason to believe that, you know, about half of independents on some issues of conservative policy and conservative issues are, you know, lean right. But what could he do to really speak to your average independent? And this January 6, 2022 speech doesn't seem really any different than a late January 2021. I'd like to unless you have another direction with the conversation, ahead. You know, we had this call yesterday and a friend and a former client, a friend of yours, a former client of ours, had a wonderful idea. He said we should really poll the public on the amendments, and maybe we don't do all 28, but maybe we take a core basket of well-known amendments and see, do Americans still think that this is law? Do they still think it's relevant? Do they still think it's applicable? In other words, are these no longer relevant? in our new context in the second decade or the third decade of the 21st century, or are they timeless? And I kind of got my mind wandering because there's a silent revolution, I think, that's going on right now. And there's a silent battle in the arena of ideas as to where is our nation going to go in terms of our interpretation of the law. And we've talked about this and we've polled this in many different ways, but in light of a press release that I released earlier last week, our first press release of 2022, basically saying that 2022 in the United States is shaping up to look like a year of resistance by many Americans. And actually it's going on throughout the Western world, but let me tie it all together. So you have two different Americas, where one America is saying we're a democracy and another America is saying, no, we're a republic. And for those who say we're a democracy, they're saying that all life and force comes from the people. And those who side with the republic say, no, it comes from the individual. So these are two very different interpretations of our law and our constitution. And it's really heating up when it comes down to the issue of executive orders. Both governors, actually county executives, governors, and the president. So the executives at all level, when they issue a mandate, when they issue an executive order, does that apply to the people, all of the people, or does that just apply to who they have, who they rule over, that's their staff? And so we've got two Americas right now trying to understand what is the law and what is the way forward. And I'm just fascinated by that. And I guess I wanted to know, where do you think we stand right now with that? And where do you think we're going as we head further into the 2020s?
You know, about 20, 25 years ago, one of our polling colleagues, I don't know if it was, I can't remember if it was Gallup or not, but took some lines, key lines from the Declaration of Independence and asked Americans if they agreed or disagreed. He had about 2/3 who disagreed with some basic elements. You had 2/3 that agreed that there is a right to a revolution, as Thomas Jefferson had written in the Declaration and then beyond. And so this has been percolating for a while, but, you know, for reasons that we have spent almost 100 of these podcasts now talking about, there's a breakdown of everything. And all of these old issues in the new context, 2021, 2022, are coming to the forefront as our institutions are breaking down. So first of all, yes, I think it's a very good idea that we poll, I would say, on the Bill of Rights. And how many believe in, you know, absolutism of the First Amendment? How many believe in the meaning of the Second Amendment, unlawful searches and seizures? How many believe in people's right to that, and how far are they willing to go? I would certainly love to get a public knowledge and a public sentiment towards that. That's one piece of what you just said. The second piece is, I don't know where we're going. I'm still the optimist in the room. I use that term. I don't use it lightly because I think we'll be okay. We're just in the eye of the storm right now. And then, you know, add to that COVID. Add to that. Look, I don't mean to belabor this, but Kazakhstan, if there is hundreds of people have died, thousands have been injured. There is a Soviet invasion going on. If this thing continues, this spreads throughout Central Asia, and we could be talking about another Arab Spring. We can be talking about an Arab Spring with Russia, China, the United States, and the EU involved. I don't mean to be alarmist about this, but It is to say that this is a huge time of turmoil, and we're here in the United States. What are the American people willing to withstand? Do we watch these foreign events? Do we shy away from U.S. intervention? You know, I mean, probably we do. Our recent history isn't so good. But these are all laid at the doorstep of our government officials. And it seems like this is not the time to be saying, well, those are your problems. What's that got to do with me? This is the time when we've got to try, they have to try to rebuild trust in us in some way. That answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I'm going to leave alone the what's going on in Kazakhstan. I'm tempted to have some commentary on that, but I'm going to leave that alone. I'm going to say it's too soon right now.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit cautious when the national media comes out with some powerful suggestions that kind of have the message to the people, hey, what are we going to stand by and let this happen? I'm a little bit cautious about that. So I'll see the developments. I remember, you know, back in, I think it was 2011 or 2012, it went viral that there was this, the prospect of a revolution in Iran. And there was it was going to be a color revolution. The green was the color, and there was all kinds of green iconography. And it was really presented to the American public like, this is it. You know, the Islamic Republic is done. We're going back to a liberal democracy. And boy, did the media jump on that one too shortly. And then, of course, never really found out what came of it. But I'll put that aside. I've got, our listeners are going to get a little treat here. I have a poll question that I haven't released yet that I was planning on releasing in the near future. But this kind of goes back to what we're talking about is, what do people on the ground, how do they interpret the law? And so I think this question gets at the heart of it. And I think it really shows where the public is. And so the question was, should the Constitution be interpreted to ensure checks and balances? Let me back up. Should the Constitution be interpreted strictly to ensure checks and balances are maintained, or loosely to ensure federal government has a stronger role in solving problems? I think that captures the historical debate going back to Jefferson and Hamilton. And so 60% side with a strict interpretation to ensure checks and balances versus only 21% who say loosely to expand federal powers to become more active in solving problems. So as today, we are a nation of rule of law that sides with a strict interpretation of the law.
Good point. And I might add that we have slightly more Democrats in our sample than Republicans. And so the degree to which this has become one-sided in favor of a stricter interpretation is because of the sentiment, at least among independents, where they are now. This is the core debate over strict and loose constructionism. It's the same debate over states' rights. Same debate over the 10th Amendment, and you know, where does the federal government leave off in terms of enumerated powers, and where do the states pick up, and who's got those rights? It's still with us, and it's sorry for the cliche, as American as apple pie. The difference today is that the stakes are very high. We are going through huge changes. And we need guiding forces. Now, who does that guidance? Is it governors and mayors? We've met a whole bunch of those groups, and they're very, very bright. But who coordinates it? What role is there of a federal government, a federal expertise, of an entity that binds together a nation to make sure that all states play to the degree possible by the same rules? Or do we just leave it up to individual states? There's a lot of them. And if we do that, then we no longer have a national community. And maybe that's what the public wants and needs right now, just that it's very unfortunate to be in this kind of a position when there needs to be COVID coordination, there needs to be economic rebuilding, there needs to be new initiatives like child care and minimum wages and so on to get people back to work and to give them hope again. And then there's national security as well. But that was a very, very important question to ask.
Yeah. And I'll just end by saying that the narratives are interesting. The presentation of the narrative that, well, there's no denial or doubt about it that we are bombarded 360 regarding major issues and crises. The question is that are these crises kind of just a black swan that emanate randomly or organically, or is this the result of government largesse? In other words, there's a belief out there that government intervention begets more government interventions. That is, the more the federal government intervenes in society and people's affairs and creates legislation and bureaucracy, it creates other issues. And so do our crises stem from completely random issues, or are these crises the result of decades of intervention? And whether we look at coronavirus, whether we look at the economy, I think there's evidence that points to government meddling in affairs and in places that they shouldn't. I'm talking about deadly gain of function research. We're talking about decades years of Federal Reserve policies that brought interest rates low to nearly zero and blowing up a bubble. So I'll just end up on that.
Last word. Yes, there are those beliefs out there, but those are not my beliefs at all. And they're about 180 degrees different from mine. And that's why I love you and I love the United States of America, that we could talk about these calmly. Off camera too, as well, which is good. Lots to talk about next week. And we'll have probably a few bites of polling data in between now and next week, right?
Yeah, we've got a lot.
Okay. Hey, have a good week. Next show is number 100.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll have to get a cake or something. Okay. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a good week.
Have a good weekend.